Greetings for today, May 21st. Welcome, everybody, to the House Committee on Rules. So, just to let you know, in this committee, and I say this for all of our committee hearings, we have decorum, so no yelling, no clapping, no signs. By all means, cheer or jeer inside as loudly as you would like, that's fine. And as right now, I'm going to open a public hearing and work session on House Bill. Is it just public hearing? It's public hearing on House Bill 3549. Adam, will you let us know what's going on?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3549 requires the State Forestry Department, or SFD, to collect and analyze information regarding sufficiency of existing legal requirements to protect certain areas in proximity to forest lands from impacts due to application of pesticides by aircraft. Requires the SFD to report findings to Interim Committee of Legislature no later than September 15, 2016. Requires individual engaging in application of pesticides by aircraft to have aerial pesticide applicator certificates. Establishes qualifications for obtaining and maintaining the certificate. Authorizes the State Department of Agriculture, or SDA, to suspend, revoke, or refuse to renew license certificate or any other authorization if the civil penalty is not paid within 90 days. Requires a maximum amount of civil penalties. Defines person for the purposes of pesticides control chapter. Requires the governing board of the Pesticide Analytical and Response Center, or PARC, to develop the standard for operating procedures for implementation by public entities represented on board to coordinate the receipt of and response to pesticide-related complaints indicating possible health or environmental effects. Requires the board to report biennially to the legislature on activities of the board and public entities represented on the board regarding the standard operating procedures. Requires the SDA to operate a telephone line for receiving and facilitating the coordination of responses to pesticide-related complaints by the public indicating a possible health or environmental effects. Requires the SDA to place information regarding pesticides on its website. Requires that information to indicate pesticides and devices listed by the department as highly toxic or restricted use. Increases the maximum amount the SDA may establish as pesticide registration fees. Allows the SDA to require the individual holding license, certificate, or other authorization to retake examination if the individual commits or is responsible for the violation indicated. Inadequate knowledge of pesticide laws and rules. Allows the department to suspend, revoke, or refuse to renew a license, certificate, or other authorization if an individual fails, retake an examination. Makes provisions other than SFD study operative other than January 1st, 2016 or January 1st, 2017. Declares an emergency and is effective on passage.
Okay, with that, what we have today is invited testimony. This is a compilation of a number of bills, so we're going to call up the representatives and one senator that were involved, and then we're going to have two panels representing different perspectives, and then we will close the public hearing. So with that, could I have Representative Leininger, Senator Dembro, Representative Witt, and Representative Clem? Everybody come on up. Representative Gilliam, I'm sorry, you have to be up here.
Well, I'm very low.
You take these.
And however you would like to start talking about the process, Representative Witt, then Representative Dembro, and then the saga, and then move to the next.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, State Representative Brad Witt, Oregon's House District 31. Also, with respect to the business before us this afternoon, Chair of the House Ag and Natural Resources Committee, appearing before you in support of House Bill 3549. This is a bill that is a product of seven bills that were on pesticides that were assigned to the House Ag and Natural Resources Committee this session, as well as day and night public testimony on those bills. A work group was formed to try and reach agreement on the 8 issues that were identified coming out of the public hearings and the bills. And as I say, the legislation is part of that recommendation. The work group's makeup was one of advocates for those who allege to have been harmed or fear harm from the misapplication of pesticides, specifically Beyond Toxics and the Craig Law Center. Environmental groups represented by the Oregon Conservation Network and its coalition of environmental organizations. The timber industry, or OFIC, and Western Helicopters, and the number of individual companies represented there. Agricultural interests represented by the Oregon Farm Bureau, Oregon Nurseries Association, and the Oregonians for Food and Shelter, and their number of affiliated members. Technical support was provided by Oregon Health Science University's Toxicology Information Center, as well as the National Pesticide Information Center. Legislators that attended included Representatives Esquivel, Susan McLean, Leininger, Barreto, Comp, McEwen, Krieger, and myself. Although my role was different, one more of a mediator than a participant. A staff was also present providing support to the group. The work group reached agreement on 6 of 8 issues, and you have a handout. It was also on OLIS that talks about the 8 issues. It's the one pager that I'm referring to now. That included the agreement was on a statewide list of regulated pesticides to be regularly available to the public electronically, creation of a dedicated hotline. And I won't go through all of these point by point by point. You can see the number of items that have been included. The point I want to make here is that hotline with the subsequent set of standard operating procedures, which I'll also address, means that if I call in and Representative Leininger calls in and then Senator Dembro calls in, Senator Dembro, rather, is not treated any differently than Representative Leininger and I would be. We all get the identical treatment. We all get professional referral. We all get the kind of technical information, I think, that one would expect. And hopefully we avoid the kind of bureaucratic runaround that that the work group was informed of, as was a public testimony. Increased licensing requirements, and again, you can go through that rather extensive list of requirements for folks who are aerially applying pesticides, doubling of pesticide penalties for the wrongful application or violation of any of the other pesticide laws. The standard operating procedures, which I just discussed, and the manner in which that is conducted. Again, I leave that here for your review. Importantly, although in another bill, House Bill 3434, which provided for funding for the increased programming and programmatic staff, one FTE for PARC, 4 for compliance, a case reviewer, and a custom service staff person. Increased fees to pay for this, upgraded system to be paid for by the industry. And lastly, an analytical review on the need for and the potential width of buffers for the aerial application of forestry, aerial application of pesticides in forestry. As I mentioned, the work group was unable to reach agreement in 2 areas, notification and reporting. Some would argue that perhaps those are 2 sides of the very same coin. Whether or not that is the case, Briefly, many of the arguments for and against notification. In terms of those requesting notification, not surprisingly, that information is requested in order for folks to be able to take precautions to avoid exposure to pesticides for humans, for animals, and even for crops. Arguments against notification, largely that it is unnecessary, principally because it would be illegal for pesticides to make that kind of drift. In addition, legally people would be subject to penalties were this to occur. It could be fines, it could be loss of the license to be able to apply pesticides. What we found, and again, this is anecdotal, we were not allowing in the process anecdotal information, although it was difficult for either side to be able to present their case on notification absent this. We did let it in. 11 instances of complaints in 5 years for the wrongful application of pesticides aerially in forestry, and a significant subset of those, significant less number. And I have to admit, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I lost my citation on that. Recollection is that it was 3 to 4. That would be subject to, I need to verify that. But it was the point I'm trying to make is a very few number of cases. Secondly, the argument against is that it is difficult to do in real time. Literally, as those helicopter blades are about to spin, and a number of us took a tour of a pesticide application earlier in this session, literally right before those blades spin, determinations are made on things like wind speed, humidity, temperature, and in fact where the individual plants are in their growth cycle. Any one of these things can shut that down, and typically it would be wind speed, not allowed much greater than a mile or two per hour in most instances, will abort the application aerially of pesticides that day. And for notifications to continue to be given and never taken place makes that exceedingly difficult, as you could imagine. Lastly, there was suggestion that there was peril to employees. This again was the anecdote from the opposition that in the past there had been folks who had experienced some kind of sabotage of equipment and those sorts of things. In the end, it was a matter of whose safety trumps whom, and that was exceedingly difficult, and I would tell you, for me, impossible decision to be made, and also exceedingly difficult because in both instances, the arguments for and against were based on safety, and those were largely anecdotal in nature. With that, that gives you the background of where we are on 3549, and as I said earlier, that legislation is based on the information that I just presented. Be happy to answer any questions.
Let's just go through the panel. Did you want Senator Denbrough, or how do you want to?
You know, I'd be happy to, Madam Chair, I'd be happy to speak next. Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity to be here. So the reason that I'm here and the reason I got involved with this issue is because there are real people. Pardon me, I'm Ann Leininger, State Representative, House District 38. The reason that I'm here is because there are real people who are getting hurt, and they need our help. And over the course of the last 5, 6, 7 months when I've been looking into this issue, I've met some of those people, and I'd like to share with you a little bit about those people. There's a woman named Melissa Pritchford who lives in Cedar Valley in Curry County, and she was telling me about what was happening when a helicopter was over her property and mist of pesticide was coming down on her property, and her children were outside trying to gather the horses because they were so afraid, and one of the horses was very young, and she ran out of the house, and she was screaming to them, come back in, something bad is happening, and they were all yelling and screaming and trying to get the horses in. It was very scary. One of the horses lost its sight. The kids had bad coughs. It was a scary thing. That person got hurt. Her family got hurt. A gentleman I spoke with a few weeks ago, Marty Hader, in Douglas County, was one of six people in a group that was on some land adjacent to where an aerial spray was happening. The group was doing some forestry work, and an aerial spray helicopter evidently flew over the adjacent land and released some pesticide, and the drift got onto their group, and he suffered some significant harm and has had some real medical problems as a result. And he said to me, if we had known that that spray was going to happen that day, we wouldn't have been at that job site. But they didn't know. Ms. Pritchford said, if we had known, you know, that that spray was happening, we could have kept the kids inside, we could have had the animals in the barn, but they didn't know. And as you may have read today, the Oregonian did a piece on a gentleman named Daryl Ivey, with whom I've spoken. He has worked in the forestry aerial spray sector, doing some work, and has gotten sprayed by helicopter pesticide spray from his own employer on several occasions, and now he has to carry a rag with him everywhere he goes because he coughs up blood and he needs to be able to have something to dispose of it. The article that the Oregonian published says an Oregon Department of Forestry monitor was on the site last month as the videos showing Ivy being sprayed, at the time of the videos showing Ivy being sprayed in his truck. So there's a problem. People are getting hurt. Somehow our regulatory system isn't preventing it or helping them in the way that we all intend, because I know everyone in this room wants to protect people from unintentional harm by aerial pesticide spray. And so we have a real problem, and I think that the bill 3549 takes some steps to help address it. I think we have many more steps we need to take, and that's why I've been advocating for some additional work. And the work that I am advocating for is notice in advance of a spray so people can stay inside, protect themselves, protect their families, put their animals in the barn or indoors. Buffers, meaningful buffers to protect homes, schools, and waterways. The Oregonian article cited drift of 400 feet recently in an incident in Douglas County where spray drifted onto someone's property. And reporting of what has happened, you know, what the spray that was delivered was, so that people can verify that, you know, if their experience is that, or if they've been harmed, what was the thing they were sprayed by, and who did it, and when. And I, you know, as I've read the Oregonian coverage, I would say I think we also fundamentally need to do a searching assessment of whether we're really missing, if something structural is going wrong in the way we monitor this and steward this as an agency, as state government, because in the last 6 months, well, since 2013, there have been some very high-profile incidents. So that's why I'm here. I think we have some ideas to make important improvement. I think some of the ideas are in the compilation bill that Representative Witt has helped shepherd. I think there's some more ideas on the table. And I think there's some things we're not going to do this session that we really, really have to do. And we will do them. And the steps that we'll take today in this session will set the stage for us to do more essential work later. So it's with a sense of a big project, a small step forward that we've got to recognize, because when you're on a hard project, you've got to recognize it when you take a step forward. And gratitude that I'm here today. Gratitude for everyone who's on the work group, everyone who's willing to take a step to see how we can be better, and gratitude to you for hearing us. So thanks.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Madam Chair, colleagues. I'm Senator Michael Dembro, District 23. That's Northeast and Southeast Portland and the city of Maywood Park. And I also, one of my assignments is to serve on the Senate Environment and Natural Resources Committee. Last year, I was the chair of that committee from 2013 to 2014, I chaired that committee. And in my first meeting, I discovered this issue of aerial spraying because the incident in Curry County had just happened. And I suddenly found myself in a position of having to address the complaints and concerns of a number of rural people from that part of the state who'd been subjected to a misapplication, a tragic misapplication. I think everyone agrees that that was the case. And an application that was an error of application, but also clearly an error of agency response. And so it led me to schedule a series of hearings throughout the interim on this subject, working with the agencies to create a new set of protocols to deal with incident response, but also to hear from witnesses about what they felt they would need to feel safe in their homes. And that then led to my drafting, together with Representative Leininger of Senate Bill 613, which looked to address this issue in a comprehensive way by first looking at notification. You've heard a lot of talk of notification. I'll come back to that. Reporting so that after an application had occurred, neighbors could know just what had been applied in their area. Buffers, one of the things that I discovered over the course of these hearings was that Oregon currently has no state buffers around residences or schools or in certain areas, sources of drinking water. And the Board of Forestry used to have buffers back in the 90s, but then some potential litigation revealed that the Board of Forestry did not have the statutory authority to set those buffers, and that it would take an act of the legislature to give them that authority. So that was another component of the bill, was to give the Board of Forestry that authority, which they could develop through an open public, they could use through an open public process. And then finally, the bill was designed to really ramp up the incident response, the agency response, and to reinvest in our park coordinated incident response system, which was actually a model for other states, but we as a state have not funded it properly, and so it hasn't been able to do the work that that it's intended to do. The decision early on in this session was that we would not pursue this bill on the Senate side. As Representative Witt mentioned, there were plenty of bills on this side. We engaged in a bicameral work group process that preceded the House work group process and heard many of the same things. Came up against many of the same issues and concerns. I agree that the issue of notification, I agree with Representative Leininger about how essential it is. I agree with Representative Witt about how controversial it can be. Really, the fundamental response of the opponents to notification was that it's really not necessary because we don't have a problem, because if spray is illegal, and so therefore it is it's not anything that we need to address. But I would assert that there are ways that we can take steps to give more real-time notification in a way that certainly doesn't cost applicators anything, that can be as close to real time as possible. And I think Representative Clem is going to address one of the initiatives in that respect. So in conclusion, I would agree with Representative Leininger that this bill, with some amendments and the together with the fee bills that Representative Witt addressed, I think does move the ball forward. It does not solve the problem. This is a very serious problem that we're facing and that we need to address. But I do really appreciate this committee's attention to it and allowing us to move it down to the next steps in the process. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Did I hear you say that the House gets things done when the Senate doesn't? Is that? No, just kidding. Representative.
I think it might be your own senator you're impugning with that comment.
I think we're going to need, I think we're gonna need concurrence.
For the record, I'm Brian Clem, State Representative from District 21, which is here in Salem, and I served on the House Ag and Natural Resources Committee last year and in the interim, which sort of is what got my interest. I think, like Senator Dembro, it's always strange working on an issue when you were once a chair of a committee working on it, so you're trying to figure out how to engage, but you've heard some of the information.
The mic just a little closer.
Well,
we're having trouble hearing.
So in one of the last couple interim committee hearings that Representative Chair Witt had of our Ag and Natural Resource Committee, we heard some of the similar, I think, portrayals of particular Curry County, that the same folks who had been in the other interim committees came to ours. And a lot of the things that I heard were it was very frustrating to not have somebody come quickly, that if there's going to be some testing done to see if we, in fact, have these high amounts of pesticides on our property that would be indicative of having had your property sprayed, you need to be there quickly in order to test it, because the coast is fairly rainy and things do wash off. We heard about, as Senator Dembro said, sort of some just different agency reactions, and it didn't seem like it meshed very well, and that there weren't necessarily a clear path that if you called here and said these things, somebody comes out within this time frame. So the some of the House product came from some bills that I introduced along with a bunch of members that aimed at some additional licensing for the aerial applicators. They're currently not licensed for aerial application. There's a paper test that you take to apply pesticides generally, but there isn't a specific certificate or license for applying it from the air. And it is a different skill set. And we have an orchard. Lots of the members of our either family or staff have passed the paper test and have that license. None of them would know what they are doing flying from the air. So assuming that they once learned how to fly a helicopter and get a license, it would be good to have some additional knowledge and continuing education around aerial application versus just normal pesticide application. There was a Senate bill that I believe is now folded in that doubled the penalties. So one of the ways that you change behavior when something is, as in Curry County, as you heard, the person has been fined and lost their license. I think it's under appeal, so he's still appealing it, but has penalties. But one of the ways you have disincentives is stiffer penalties or longer terms of license revocation. That's in here. The funding is probably the biggest part, that when we in those hearings heard from agencies, why aren't people there more quickly? Why aren't people doing things? They said, well, we have been cut back over the Great Recession to half time in some positions and only one or two people for the whole state. So my original bill had a allotment of general fund, and as Chair Witt mentioned, that's been switched to fees on the pesticide. Is it registration fee or applicator fee? I think it's a registration fee. And I think in the end that will also pull in agricultural interests on the fee side of it, because we all pay into that for the use of these chemicals in Oregon, and I think you'll find that the agricultural interests are also interested in attacking this problem. Even though the bill only applies to aerial on forestry, there will be some of us paying these fees to help fund this program and are pleased to do so. Then the Dash 4 amendment is what I want to talk about specifically. That's just something we've been working on in the last day or two. And this comes on the issue in particular of buffers. The base bill talks about having a report back, I think two Novembers from now from the Board of Forestry the Department of Forestry about what might be appropriate buffers. As was mentioned, current law is that the federal labeling system that would give a buffer or not on a given chemical is what we use. And there isn't a state buffer. There's just the federal label requirement. And that might be big, might be non-existent. So the Dash 4 amendments implement the last buffers we had in Oregon, which were in 1996. That's 60 feet around dwellings and schools. If you think about it, the buffer largely is currently the property line because it's already illegal to go over the property line. This would be a precautionary 60 feet beyond what would already be the case, which is you're not supposed to cross your property onto your neighbor's. So that this will have the effect of 60 feet back from a property would need to be either unsprayed entirely or figure out another way to do it by hand or something like that. I think the bill actually says unsprayed entirely. So that's some chunk of just setback to try and get another additional boundary between the dwellings, the school, and the aerial application. I can tell you from having an orchard where a school built next to it later, some of the things you just end up doing are modifying your practices. So I'm not sure actually that the bill says, as it just occurred to me. Other states, they say when in session, so that way the person can still use some kind of sprays when schools close for the summer, but not during the other time. I'm not sure we caught that, but in the past I've always thought about that because in our case we don't spray aerially anyway, but we modified our practices to avoid times when school was in session, and that costs money, that costs time, but the school moved in next to us, and my wife and her sister went there, and it was just part of being a good neighbor was to change some of our practices to accommodate the need for a school in our community. So the Dash 4s implement a 60-foot buffer. The other piece I wanted to talk about was a POP that is sitting down in Chair Rayfield's and Chair Devlin's Subcommittee on Natural Resources. And this would fund a expansion of an electronic notification system. So when we say we don't have notification, we have a electronic notification system. The window for which it at its kind of widest point or narrowest point could tell you when there's going to be a spray coming up is a year. So that's the part that people would like to have updated to something that is more useful. The point wasn't at the time to try and get it down. It was to get a system online so there would be a system available to the agency to have information about what was sprayed and when. The point of this expansion that I'm describing, this POP, Program Option Package for you non-Ways and Means people, is to try and improve public accessibility to the portal because right now it's really more set up for how to report to the agency. With the thought that over time, as that gets developed, we can also work on improving the ability for somebody to use that system to log into and see, okay, there's something coming up. I'm going to change my plans now, and I'm going to go away for the weekend, or I'm going to, you know, have my kids in. Because even though there's a buffer and it's already illegal, I still would prefer to not be in the area during that time. So that's the point of expanding the public system. What I will tell you when you talk to the industry is lots of neighbors already have opted onto list to get that notification, and lots of companies will already do it by mail, by phone call, by text message, up until the time where they feel that the person is not really acting in good faith and is just using it because they're unhappy that they live next to forest land. And so we're trying to find another way to deal with that problem because there is a certain percentage of folks who aren't getting the notifications from their neighbor for whatever reason. That's what this POP package would eventually help address. So buffers of 1996 buffers come back. The fern system is about a 60-40 split, so it's almost $2 million expansion in total, but about $500,000 of that would come from the industry. The fee increases, about $2 million, the doubling of the fee, come from the industry to hire all those new investigators and analysts to improve response times, start the 24-hour hotline, the licensing requirement. I'm probably missing one or two in there, but I would argue it's a good package, and between better enforcement of existing law and the precautionary buffers working on public notification through this FERN upgrade, it's a solid package. I would commend your would ask you to support it.
Thank you. Any questions for this? Yes, Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The good senator referred to a violation of law and it went by fairly quickly. Could you tell us a little more about what you meant by that phrase?
Sure, Representative Barnhart. And, you know, really it was Representative Witt that mentioned that first, that and Representative Clem as well, that, you know, it is illegal to spray or to have spray drift onto a neighbor's property. And yet sometimes it happens.
But, and if I may follow up, yes. is there any kind of penalty for violating that rule? And if so, are we able to enforce it?
I can take you, or Representative Witt might tell you, and then I'll touch on how this bill might help with that. But the existing law is there too.
Madam Chair, Representative Barnhart, yes, it is illegal, and there could be civil penalties applied depending on if it's a first-time occurrence. While the penalties doubled, it would still be half of what a subsequent penalty would be. So two or more violations, again, doubles the penalty. It could be up to $4,000 per incidence. And you could lose your license to be able to apply those pesticides, or any pesticides, frankly. So there's the penalty and the likelihood that you could you could lose your livelihood, that's probably the ultimate penalty.
If Madam Chair, if I might just finish up. So in particular, the reference, we talked about the Curry County case. The penalty in that case is even more severe because, and I think it was in 2009, we passed a statute that's about a more negligent use, not an inadvertent accident where you went off property, but there's some sort of gross negligence. So the fine on the operator was $10,000. The fine on the company was also another $10,000, and then the revocation of the license. But part of giving the penalties, and so this bill doubles the lower penalties when you weren't grossly negligent, but part of the challenge is to build a case. The Department of Ag has to have good information, has to have investigators there relatively quickly, has to have tests done relatively quickly, and then from a community relations standpoint needs to inform people while they're doing that what the delay is. And then the agencies who are trying to enforce the law also need to be able to sort of get instantly from the applicator, okay, what was sprayed and where. And our current law has that available for agencies to call and get. But we learned here that we needed to do some coordination better so other agencies knew to tell, you know, if you're at Oregon Health Authority, you can call and get it immediately from the company. And some of them didn't know it. And the standard operating procedure portion of Senator Dembro and Representative Leininger and also this package should help significantly. I think the agencies have done some of that since then already, but it's important for just the people not to have to know how to navigate a bureaucratic maze, that you have one phone number you call and you'll get instantaneous response when you think the law is already being violated, current law is being violated.
I think Representative Leininger and Representative Witt also wanted to respond.
Thank you, Chair Hoyle. Representative Barnhart, I think, you know, your comment brings to mind two important things. One is I believe that even in that very concerning sort of notorious situation in Curry County, though there has been a penalty assessed, I believe it is not, no penalty has been paid at this time. So, and there's a lot of concern about whether those penalties actually are significant enough and required to be paid out to an extent that deters bad conduct. The second point is, of course, in our government, we try to prevent harm through deterrence after the fact, but also through precautionary steps. And so one of the great things about this package that we have been developing some, I believe, some consensus around is that through increased buffers and investment in a system that will help provide meaningful notice, folks will be able to avoid harm in the first instance, you know, which is something that we all, of course, share a desire to have happen.
Representative Witt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Barnhart, my initial response was one in the instance where it may have been an accidental, unintentional drift. If we're looking at Curry County, that may very well be a $10,000 per incident type level of fine, significantly greater. That was, I think, an example of a rogue applicator. And that is the person that we need to put, not only the person, but the entire company out of business. I would also add, and I want, because there have been several mentions of the Curry County incident, I want everybody going forward to have their eyes wide open. If we are discussing buffers, the buffers are not going to address the Curry County incident. We would need buffers of probably a minimum of 5 miles to be able to address that situation. Buffers of 60 feet or a quarter mile do not address the Curry County incident. That was a rogue operator. That was perhaps faulty equipment. That was a very special incident that will not be addressed with the buffers under consideration here. So that was an applicator that we need to go after, has been gone after, and we need to take that person out of business, period.
Yeah, thank you. The general rule is when somebody injures someone else by accident, by negligence, that the person who's injured has a right to recover damages from the person who caused the injury, or if they're an agent, from the person they're an agent for. Are there any insurance requirements for this kind of work, like we have for driving a car, or is there a similar tort remedy for someone injured through this process? You described a couple of people with pretty serious injuries as a result, or loss of property as a result of these incidents, and I'm wondering if they have the right to recover, and if there's an insurance requirement attached to the license or certification now, or in the bill.
Chair Hoyle, Representative Barnhart, thank you so much for that technical legal question. I would like to defer that to someone else. But in the absence of someone else at the panel, I think that some key facts are a lot of the people in these areas who live near timberland who have come to us seeking help are people of extremely limited resources. Yep. And may even be people who are sick and harmed by the incident. And we need to take steps to protect them on the front end. We need to make sure that the agency is functioning in a way so that we don't keep hearing these high-profile, notorious, and frightening stories about harm that is coming to community members because someone has harmed them through spraying of aerial pesticides. So I can't speak to exactly what legal remedies are available, but I sure know that precautionary steps are needed, and a thorough review of what's going on at the Oregon Department of Forestry and why we keep hearing about tragedies like this, about the Daryl Ivey incident, about the Marty Hayter incident, about some incidents that community members who've come all the way from Curry County and Douglas County and Tillamook County and who wish to testify before you today would like to describe. So we don't want to waste more of your time hearing legislators when there are community members who want to share their stories. So thank you for your question.
And Madam Chair, Representative Barnhart, I don't have the information to answer your question directly either. Simply not familiar with the insurance requirements. With that said, I think your mention of those individual cases underscores the need for the increased funding that the funding bill provides so that we can have adequate testing and adequate scientific review of whether or not that exposure has occurred and whether it was what pesticide application would be linked to that. Absolutely critical.
Madam Chair, let me just say, just following up on Rep. Leininger's comments about the type of individuals who were affected down in Curry County, I was really struck by the fact that many of them were themselves either currently or had formerly worked in the timber industry. These were not people who were against forest practices by any means, but they felt that they had been betrayed, as it were, by the way that the forest practices were being implemented, by their, you know, inability to protect themselves and their families and their animals. And, you know, that I think really is the crux of this.
Okay. Any other questions for this? Because we have Representative Klein. Yeah.
I can wait and see if you have another question. I just had one comment before we wrap up.
Okay, because we have two other panels. We're only taking invited testimony, but I want to make sure. Are there any other questions for this panel? Yes, Representative Kenema. So,
if I understood the bill correctly, these are going to be licensed contractors that would be doing this, so they would be required through their licensing agency to be bonded, which gets to the question of whether there's funding for reimbursement in damage. And that's a little bit of a, mostly a statement, but perhaps a question.
Well, and Madam Chair, Representative Kenemer, that may well be the case, but also keep in mind that it's not, many of these are private contractors working for private companies too, so.
Representative McClain.
Just wanted to publicly thank our Ag and Forestry Chair, Representative Witsit, Witt, fantastic job brokering resolution. You continue to bring a lot of diverse people, and I commend your work.
Thank you very much, sir.
So, Madam Chair, if I might, just one thing that Senator Denbrough reminded me of. I think it's important to realize that if you think this through, the folks who are doing the aerial applications are private companies that usually do it in almost all cases, with one exception that I'm aware of, that do it on behalf of landowners. And so typically when we think about how to regulate, we think about regulating the activity of the company doing the aerial spraying. In this case, this package we're bringing you is almost exclusively funded by the landowners, who hired somebody who may have in some cases done something improper, in other cases definitely done something improper, but the remedy we're offering is being paid for, much like if somebody you hired to come do a pesticide application at your home and they did something wrong, you're now the one paying for the package, not the pesticide company you hired to do it. You are, as the homeowner. That's the analogy of this situation. So I want to reiterate that these timber companies that a lot of these folks worked in aren't the ones doing the spraying. They've hired someone to do a professional service, and if that person mishandled the situation, they're now on the hook for coming in front of the legislature. And I just want to make that clear, because we often think the spray companies doing the work and the landowners are one and the same, and that's probably only the case in with Weyerhaeuser and maybe another couple of helicopters. But most of these logging operations and timber companies don't keep helicopter fleets for this. They hire somebody else. And so I want to at least commend them for trying to clean up a problem that is not entirely of their own making, because they're dealing with contractors and trying to make it work as well as possible. And they're stepping up and paying nearly $2.5 million a biennium to help fund this package. And we're not really asking the applicators to do that. It's really going to be the landowners who are doing it in this case.
Hey, thank you very much. Really appreciate it. Let's see. Next up, I'm going to have Brenda Freketic, Jacob Gibbs, and Eric Geyer. Whoever would like to start may start.
I'll start. Chair Hoyle, members of the committee, my name is Eric Geyer. I work for Roseburg Forest Products. For the first 10 years of my career, I was a forester, and so I've had a lot of experience with spray operations on the ground. But as I've also been involved in the pesticide discussions in the legislature since 2007. I want to take a moment to thank Senators Edwards and Dembro and Representatives Witt, Clem, and Leiniger for their work on this, their interest in this, and the package that is before us today. I'd like to support House Bill 3549 and a couple of points about that. It's important that it addresses several deficiencies that have hampered state agencies responding to complaints. And specifically, it provides a mechanism for definitive outcomes for investigations. Why is this important? It's really critical that we understand if there is a legitimate problem or not. And we support that. I know the landowners that and the citizens that have concerns would support that as well. We want to know if there was a problem. And if there was, we want to get to the root of that so that we don't repeat that problem and the applicator gets that corrected in the future. If there wasn't a problem, we want to know that too. We want to be able to track that. We've seen quite an increase in complaints as the as this issue has become more public recently. And we want to know, is that something that is actually happening, or is it something else that's driving that? That's important to everyone involved. I'd also like to say, from Roseburg's perspective, one of our key objectives is to be a good neighbor. I know I've observed for the rest of the industry that everyone is in the same position. We try to do what's right for our neighbors, we try to protect them, and we do that through the use of our modern technology, as well as strict protocols in how we apply and work with our applicators to ensure that adjacent property is not damaged. But I would say, if you don't take my word for it, please understand that we're incentivized to do that as well. There is absolutely no good business practice that comes from complaints and investigations or off-site deposition. So we hold our contractors to a very high standard. We expect that, and we're committed to that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Hoyle, members of the committee, thank you so much for having us here today. I really appreciate your time and consideration with this very important issue, not just to farmers and foresters, but I think to all Oregonians. My name is Brenda Furkatich, and I farm in St. Paul. I have 1,000 acres, and I raise grass seed, hazelnuts, wheat, clover, vegetables, and vegetable seeds. I'm in favor of this House Bill 3549 because it's not often that bills come up that truly are working to make farmers and foresters better. I think this bill has that exact intention in mind. After a rigorous work group went through a lot of the issues that we're facing today, it was found that the ODA, Oregon Department of Agriculture, needs more tools and resources. And as a farmer, I couldn't agree more. As a licensed applicator, I not only spray all types of pesticides in a safe manner on my crops, I also attend countless hours of training and re-education throughout the year and year after year. There's no lack of effort on my part, and I can assure you of that. I have pesticide labels saved in my phone. I have all sorts of resources at my disposal. I talk to experts daily who can guide me if I have any questions. I say all of this knowing that I am not the exception by any means. I know tons of farmers. I know a majority of farmers all over this state that take that same due diligence to take care of their crops and give Oregonians and people around the world safe and healthy food from this state. We also take careful notes and we keep extensive records. We only are supposed to keep records for 2 years. That's the minimum, or that's how long we have to keep them. But for us, you could ask me 8 years ago what I sprayed, and I could tell you on exactly what field, the date, the time, who sprayed it, the EPA registration number, and why I sprayed it. Because we do that because we know that if ODA comes knocking on our door, we have a responsibility to let them know why we did what we did. Because we're proud of what we're doing. Like I said, we're growing safe, healthy food. I know that there are bad actors in all industries. I think we can all agree on that. And I think it's unfortunate, but all we can do is work together to make the tools that mitigate that better. For instance, this hotline that they want to put in place, and also being able to more easily report pesticide issues, further funding to help investigations. I think these are steps in the exact right direction that we need to be going. I think even increasing civil penalties seems like a reasonable request. I'm speaking to you today as a farmer and a business owner, and whose family's livelihood rests on the shoulders of markets I can't control and weather I just pray turns out. But I'm also speaking to you today as a daughter, as a wife, and as a mom. I have a one-year-old son who, he's actually out in the hallway right now, and I have number two currently on the way. So safety of my family has never been higher on my radar. I live surrounded by these agricultural fields that are sprayed multiple times a year. And they're not just sprayed by me. They're sprayed by my neighbors, by commercial applicators. And I can tell you that I know they're doing a safe and diligent job to do the right thing. I feel safe letting my son play outside. I feel safe gardening outside. I know that we're breathing clean air, and I truly enjoy this country living lifestyle that we are allowed in this state. I also say that knowing that farmers, you know, we have PPE that's required. We have reentry periods. And these aren't just suggestions that we follow. These are guidelines that are hard fast on many farms across the state. And they're that way because we know how dangerous these chemicals can be. We have a respect for them, and that's why we go through so many trainings to get that knowledge. I guess with all the safety talk, you would think that maybe more regulations and more reporting would make pesticides safer in this state. I don't necessarily agree, however. I think that the bill that's before you is a very smart bill, and I think it takes care of a lot of the issues that we're facing. But I think that we're also at a very high regulated state right now. I talked about the hours of education that we receive, the amount of record keeping that we have to do. But also, I think that if we're forced to do that record keeping in a public way, it would cause a lot of harm to my farm. My concern is some of the acts of terrorism that have already been done on farms across this state concerning hot topics like GMOs. I don't want to open my door to that kind of harm that could be brought onto my land. Information in the wrong hands does no one any good. I would urge you to support this bill as it came out of the work group. Support more tools for the ODA to help farmers be better farmers and foresters be better foresters. In agriculture, we're an industry that is always changing and learning. I can't say that what we're doing now is perfect, because that can't be true. Farming is a constant experiment of expertise, knowledge, risk, honoring our past while trying to continue this legacy that we have here in Oregon. We're not a stagnant industry, so to give us more regulations is not the simple answer. We need people who can help us become better and make sure that what we are doing, while not regulating us out of farming this great soil. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Well, thank you all very much. My name is Jake Gibbs. I'm with Lone Rock Timber out of Roseburg, Oregon. I've been a forester for 18 years, 12 years in the field, and then I got promoted, and I'm not always sure that was the wisest choice that I've made. Appreciate the time to speak to this bill. I want to reiterate the testimony of my counterparts up here. We take our responsibility to apply these products seriously and evaluate the ability to use these important tools, and believe violators of that trust and that law should be held accountable. House Bill 3549 is an improvement to the continued use of these important forest management tools and assure safety of all Oregonians. More regulation is not necessarily needed, but more capacity for enforcement and response, it definitely is. House Bill 3549 brings needed capacity and coordination to the pesticide programs that already exist in this state. It brings six new FTEs to ODA. You've heard this from the panel of the legislators. Additional employees to the pesticide analytical response. The standard operating procedures among all the agencies that regulate the different land uses out there, forestry, ag, health, those standard operating procedures need to be updated, and those agencies are working towards that. The 24-hour hotline, the idea that people can get a standard call, is critically important. It makes logical sense. Electronic notification the Department of Forestry has initiated and working forward as part of this package and paid for, and that would be a critical improvement. Representative Clem mentioned who's paying for this and the cost of these programs. Department of Ag related package is $2.41 million. That comes from the pesticide registrants in this state, just to have their products sold here. The ODF package, the Department of Forestry, that's 40% of that money comes from the landowners that harvest and manage forest lands in this state. The idea of certification for our applicators, all my foresters that actually do the field work have licensed to commercially apply these products. We believe that and support the notion that this should be expanded to our aerial applicators. And the idea of doubling fees, I can't believe, or for violating the law, how often is it that I would come here and say, fine, if I screw up, double that fine. But that is exactly what's needed here. And it hasn't been touched on yet, but the notion, but Representative Clem did point out that the Dash 4s apparently have language addressing the buffers, the need for additional safety guards around our homes and schools. That's a move forward. So with that, I would just ask you to please support this important bill. It's a product of difficult conversations, and I would just reiterate my appreciation for those folks, legislators and stakeholders that had those hard conversations. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there any questions for this panel? Yes, Representative Nose.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was wondering if someone on the panel could explain to me what the difficulty has been around trying to reach agreement around notice and reporting around spring. You kind of touched on it a little bit, but maybe someone could just elaborate on it a little more.
Sure. Want to go first, or? Chair Hoyle, Representative Nose. Notification in real time, as it's been presented as the ask, is challenging and difficult in the sense that we are subject to weather and timing of every day that we're operating. And to provide one, to do that just to one person is a challenge. To do it to multiple is an additional challenge. And to demonstrate to you that I have done that is a challenge. I'd leave that.
Chair Hoyle, Representative Nose, maybe a couple of more things that come to my mind. One is that I question the proximity issue in the notification. So we have a standard at our company where we will notify our adjacent neighbors. Almost all of the complaints that we experience seem to come from quite a farther distance. We've had complaints that have come as far away as 6 miles. The sound of the rotor on a helicopter is quite loud when it's in a valley, and it carries quite a ways. And we've had experiences where people have adverse reactions to that, and so they have concerns, and they file a complaint, call the ODA, whoever it may be. So I'm not sure that notification in that sense truly would satisfy those folks in real time. We simply can't notify people in a massive radius. The other thing is, and it was mentioned earlier, I think by Representative Clem, our process is to notify our adjacent neighbors, and I believe he called it until there's a lack of good faith. And we have had those experiences where our people have been threatened, intimidated, and we simply are not willing to put our folks at risk in those situations where they are required to tell somebody who has threatened them that they'll be at a certain place at a certain time doing something that the other person does not approve of.
Follow up, Madam Chair? It's more of a comment, but I'm sympathetic to what you say about people who are concerned, you know, when they're 6 miles away. I think that, you know, and what I'm struck by is we sometimes, you know, it seems like we could find a balance between giving appropriate notice to the people that are close by that are really affected, because I hear you about the safety of your employees, you know, being threatened. But I think, you know, the flip side is we also have to try to look about the safety of people that are living nearby where these chemicals are applied. And I don't have the perfect answer for that. I mean, I think that's what we struggle with around here is how do we balance those things.
Thank you.
Could you just, as you're the people that would be working on one side of it, tell us what difference an investment in Ferns in the electronic notification system would that do for ease of being able to notify people if you had that electronic portal?
Chair Hoyle, members of the committee, I'm not entirely sure I'm the best qualified to answer that. It is my understanding that the Ferns will provide an opportunity for subscribers to access information in a digital format. Previously, it was on paper. And so if you subscribed, you would simply say, I want to know what's happening in a set area. And then there was they had to pay for that because there was a processing fee for the department. This should make it simpler through the electronic process. It should be faster. And I'm not sure how that's going to work. I think there are some issues that need to be worked out there.
Okay, but likely an improvement. At least there's one place where people can go for information.
Well, absolutely.
Any other questions? With that, thank you very much. And I'll call up panel two. So Kathleen Rickard, Lisa Arkin, and Chris Rush.
Yeah.
Right. Absolutely. Come on up. And we're going to recess for one moment, and then Republicans are meeting over there. For your patience, and thank you for coming up. Who would like to start? Ms. Arkin.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Lisa Arkin, and I'm the executive director of Beyond Toxics, which is a statewide nonprofit working on environmental health issues throughout our state. Among our members are many rural Oregonians who have experienced harm from pesticide drift from aerial applications on and near their land from forestry. I served on both the House and the Senate work groups convened to explore this issue. Beyond Toxics is neutral on House Bill 3549. We do feel the bill does contain helpful language, especially around certifying applicators, putting deadlines on paying for fines, which had never been there before, and a hotline for complaints. So yes, we are moving forward, but we can take bolder and better steps, and I'm hoping we can discuss that. The topic of aerial spray exposures has gained statewide attention and testimony from hundreds of rural residents and workers who have suffered, and they need you, their legislators, to enact meaningful and protective solutions. Their loss of property and loss of health is real, and in a number of cases, verified by forensic evidence. They deserve the same protections as their neighbors in Washington, in California, in Idaho, in Alaska, who have protective buffer zones, better reporting, and access to spray records. I want to mention that it's been talked about that there haven't been very many complaints about forestry pesticide spray exposures, but I think this is a highly underreported situation. The Oregonian did a story on one person in Douglas County who had filed a complaint with the Department of Agriculture but had not ever made it to any kind of recording as a complaint. And Representative Leininger mentioned one logger, Marty Hader, who was recently part of a logging crew who was sprayed while they were on their job site. I think it was March 27th. So maybe this is an opportunity for me to file a complaint on their behalf and explain to you how these cases are underreported. Marty Hader and four other loggers were listed as complainants on a Department of Agriculture case report dated April the 7th, and they reported severe health impacts from their exposure. Two of them went to the emergency room. They missed work, and some of them are still suffering ill effects. However, on an Oregon Department of Agriculture case report with a date of May 11th, all of their names had been removed as complainants without their permission, and the complaint was no longer filed as a complaint, but as a matter of concern. So that will never make it into some of the statistics you've been hearing about. I think this is egregious, and these men, these workers who have to have a job to feed their families have not been served well by the system. So what do you think we need? I'm hoping that you'll explore the options of including four important things. And I'd like to describe them with specific examples of how it would help. First, we could definitely need an advanced notification system to allow rural residents to receive notice about the location, date, and time of an aerial spray operation as best as possible, so that they can take steps to limit their exposure. The Oregon Department of Forestry does have currently a budget line item, as has been described, to expand their online notification system for public accessibility. And the technology is certainly there to do this, and I hope that the legislature will support funding that. Here's an example of how advanced notification would help. In Curry County, Josephine County, Lane County, parents and grandparents reported that their children ran outside because they were excited at the sound of the helicopter. But as a result, the children got sprayed on, either directly or by drift caused by wind drafts. The children experienced coughing, prolonged asthma attacks, sore throats, severe headaches, and stomach pains from these exposures. Advanced notification would help parents and grandparents keep their children safe from harm. Secondly, we need to require sprayers to provide open, accurate records that are not kept secret. Any concerned Oregonian should have the access to records so that they can know what was applied near their home, and so that medical professionals have the information they need to respond to medical emergencies. So in a specific example, the case of the loggers that were sprayed in Douglas County, as well as the residents that were sprayed in Curry County, those who went to an emergency room were told that they had to tell the doctor and the staff what they were sprayed with in order to receive specific treatment. Not having that information, many of them did not receive proper treatment. But in the case of a hazardous material truck driver who did know what he was sprayed with, since he was in charge of those chemicals, when he reported it using the names of the chemicals, he was put in a decontamination unit and his clothes were put in an isolation chamber. He received the medical attention he needed to help him recover. Third, the issue of no spray buffers around homes and schools is critical. The public would like to see the legislature reestablish Oregon's previous rule requiring 500-foot buffers around homes. That is what was required until the early 90s. We also need enhanced buffers to protect drinking water systems and fish-bearing streams. So in Gold Beach, had there been no spray buffers around homes, the pilot would not probably have used a residential corridor to travel from his chemical loading site to his clear-cut where he was spraying. He would have been required to be more cautious and cognizant of the homes in the area. And lastly, about funding the Pesticide Analytical Response Center. True, our agencies need more assistance to have proper staffing, but one thing that hasn't yet been discussed is making sure the Oregon Health Authority is part of this funding. They are the health experts. They have the toxicologists. It's those people that also need to be there during an investigation on site. The Oregon Department of Agriculture doesn't have the medical expertise. Our neighboring states of Washington, Alaska, Idaho, and California all have stronger regulations to protect health and waters of the state. A 2011 U.S. EPA report did verify that. So what Oregonians need now are common sense and reasonable practices, such as forewarning, access to data, and buffer zones. Oregonians around the state are asking you to pass bold and meaningful pesticide spraying reform in this legislative session. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having us speak today. My name is Nancy Webster, and I grew up in Coos County. My father, my uncles, my grandfather were all employed by the timber industry. Fast forward 47 years later, and I'm spending most of my retirement in Rockaway Beach. And I was sitting on our porch one day, and I looked up and saw this massive clear cut less than a half mile from our house. My friend, who's a retired DEQ water quality tester, we decided to hike up into there, and we were shocked to see that 82% of our 1,400-acre watershed, which is the municipal water for Rockaway Beach but private-held industrial land, had been logged. We started talking to the contract loggers, and they said, hey, this is your water. This is some of the best water around. You need to be concerned. You need to talk to ODF because they're going to aerial spray. And she and I were like shocked that they would aerial spray in our watershed. And so I started trying to find out more information. And about 6 months later, I all of a sudden realized that they were aerial spraying about a half mile from my house. These are really steep slopes. These are slopes that face the Pacific Ocean. There is not a calm weather moment with winds down there. And I could smell the movement of the pesticides from that spray. And then I tried to find out what were in these sprays. Neither the our local water department could tell me, neither did the Department of Forestry, and finally, actually, the forester for the company said, yes, these are this is the chemicals we're spraying, and it's a cocktail of chemicals. So then the Forest Department, ODF, said, well, you could become a subscriber. So I paid the $25 to learn about when they're going to spray in my watershed. Well, that was like you get a six-month notification, and so then one day, a couple of years ago, we were walking near the watershed, and we saw on a stump it said, in 2 weeks, you're going to be sprayed. And so we called the company, and, you know, 6 months is not really adequate notification, especially when you can smell it when they spray. And they say, well, it comes straight down, and maybe you're not really being, you know, it's low levels of contamination. Well, there's a lot of uncertainty. There's no air monitoring available. The next concern is our drinking water. The 1,400 acre, it's like a bowl, our watershed, steep slopes, and then Jetty Creek runs down and then branches out. There's protection of 60 feet from aerial spraying along the fish-bearing part of the stream. Where it becomes headwaters, there's no buffers. They spray right over those buffers. There's very little testing available from DEQ. There's no coordination between the Department of Agriculture and DEQ to know when they're actually going to spray so that they could put the monitor in. I found out and then was able to tell DEQ there was an ad hoc test. The test did come up positive for one of the chemicals being sprayed, although lower than EPA level of concern. And then someone from DEQ quoted, if we had more adequate testing, maybe more of the chemicals would be showing up. So it leaves us, and then a woman from the EPA said, if you smell it, you're exposed, though we don't know the level. There's no air monitoring available. And so for a community like Rockaway, which is just one example of other coastal communities, most of the coastal communities have surface water. Our surface water is being exposed, and the air we breathe is being exposed. And then I had the notification for the watershed, but I'm basically directly the next section over from the watershed, which I hadn't paid another $25. So in August 2013, watching the helicopter appear that we found out that we were about to be sprayed again. And they sprayed that day from the residential borders from Jetty Creek just north of Rockaway all the way to Garibaldi, which is about 5 to 7 miles. And there was no notification for those people. It was a hot summer day. There was plenty of tourists in town. People commented, they looked up and saw the aerial spraying. And, you know, people were really concerned about watching and having no notification. So I think it's really critical as a first step that we talk about notification, one that gives us a warning that we can, like, shut our windows, leave town if we have that luxury. And also I think we need to know what chemicals are being sprayed. And I think also we need buffers. I mean, you can't just spray right up to a school and to residential areas. And within our watershed, we need to look at establishing meaningful buffers. All the states around us have more buffers than we do. And I think it's really, it seems like common sense that there's so much uncertainty in this that we shouldn't be risking our own health. There's a lot of elderly people in my neighborhood. There's some people with young children. This, we feel, is a public health risk, and that we need to start taking the moral courage to look at this issue and make decisions that protect people's health.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yep.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, Committee. I thank you for allowing me to speak before you. My name is Catherine Rickard, and I am from Curry County, and I am an aerial herbicidal spray victim. Most of you have heard of this incident, so I will only highlight some of the experience. My family and 45 residents of Cedar Valley have been both physically and emotionally harmed by this experience. We have suffered losses of our pets, livestock, and damage. We continue to worry about our health and when or if another spray incident is going to happen. We received minimal help from our own state agencies. We had to go all the way to the state attorney general's office to get any help. We had no investigation for 7 days, and they were notified that there was a spray incident the day after. It was 6 months before we were even told what was sprayed on us. We were denied adequate health care because of this. We could not even trust our own water sources because they were contaminated. And while you talk about increases of fines on the pilots due to errors, due to negligence, those fines are great if they're actually enforced. However, my particular pilot that hit us is still flying around, still causing havoc, and still has not paid a fine, and he has not lost his license. I'm not going to see that soon, I don't think. If accurate record keeping had been mandated before and after a spray operation, we would have known what was going to be sprayed on us. With accurate and timely record keeping, our state agencies might have reacted differently instead of treating us as if we were lying. The spray victims would have had access to what was sprayed in 2 to 3 days instead of 6 months. Our physicians would have known how to actually treat us in a timely manner. The state agriculture department would not have been so confused as to what was actually sprayed and what spray operation was going on. Why is it so difficult for the people who are sprayed to get this information in a timely manner? We need advanced notification. Why do we need advanced notification? The reasoning is simple: to provide people the opportunity to avoid an impending spray incident, so that we can bring our children in, our animals, our elderly, or sick, either indoors or move them out of the area to avoid drift or a direct spray. I personally heard arguments against notification. They claimed that people will spray themselves, stating, the helicopter did it, or people will sabotage the equipment so the spray operation couldn't go forward. I read in the Oregonian, one of the legislators could not decide whether to protect helicopter crews or eco-terrorists. Do I look like an eco-terrorist? No. I am a concerned citizen. I am a logger's daughter. It is what clothed me, put food on my back, and a roof over my head. And I am personally offended by every one of those statements. I should have the right to protect myself and my family. Should have the right to have advanced notification, which would help us prepare. I'm not an environmentalist per se. I enjoy the outdoors and the wildlife. I want to keep it clean. But I am a concerned citizen that wants safety for everyone in Oregon. I am simply a logger's daughter, born and raised in Roseburg, Oregon. I have been forced to try to protect my rights as a citizen of Oregon. I ask you, help me. I ask you, make the moral and ethically correct decisions based on your constituents and their rights.
I will leave you with this thought. This is not only a rogue pilot error, as some would like you to believe. It also is due to Oregon's weak laws. This also is not an isolated incident, as it is happening over and over across the state. Klamath, Curry, Coos, Lane, Douglas, Tillamook. There are many, many counties that are involved in this now. So, what if it had been you and your loved ones, and you were in the situation I was in Cedar Valley? What if you had had no idea a spray event was going to happen? You had no advance notification, so you were unable to remove yourself, your family, your loved ones, your animals. Your water was contaminated. You or a loved one became ill, and you could not get accurate records. God forbid this happens to you. What will you do? I can tell you, you would want advanced notification, and you would want buffer zones, and you would want accurate record keeping, because it may just be the one thing that'll save the life of you or your loved one. I thank you for listening, and I hope you make the best decision.
Thank you. Any questions for this panel? So I do want to go over what is in the bill. Ms. Arkin, I think you talked about how there was previously a 500-foot buffer. 500-foot buffer was for specific, I believe they were herbicides or pesticides, so there were four different ones that were called out. And then for 2 weeks in 1995, when those stopped being used because they were banned, those 500-foot buffers were in place, but then were replaced by 60-foot buffers for all aerial pesticides. So what we have done is gone back to what the buffer was, which is the 60-foot buffer for all residences and schools. So by residences, it's anything that people reside in. So whether that's a nursing home, any kind of home or school. So that's what this is in this bill. So I would hate for people to get the wrong information. What we've done is we reinstituted the buffer zones from what was previous to 1997 when that was taken off. Then we have a 24-hour hotline that is put in because I think that you're right and you had such compelling testimony. There needs to be a place that someone can call where they can have someone on the other end of the line that knows what to do with that complaint, that so that you're not waiting for 7 days to get a response. Also, if all the calls go into one place, then we can collect data about who's calling, how many reports there are, and we can have responses. We also will be investing in ferns and electric recording system, and we'll be funding with the industry. We'll be funding more investigators with a licensing and more training. So we will actually have five more people that will be able to go out so that we can react based on facts, on data. And again, we'll have ease of access so people don't get lost in the system. So I just want to let you know what we do have in the bill and wanted to clarify any misinterpretation of what the rules previously were. So thank you very much. Any other comments or questions? All right, with that, thank you. And we are going to adopt the -4 amendments. So do you want to make a motion to adopt the -4 amendment? Okay. Oh, wait. First, I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3549.
And, Madam Chair, I move to adopt the -4 amendment to House Bill 3549.
Vice Chair Gilliam has propose that we adopt the -4 amendment to House Bill 3549. Is there discussion? Is there objection? If not, the motion passes. And with that, I will close the public hearing and work session on House Bill 3549. With that, I will
open a work session on House Bill 2478. And Representative Smith Warner, I would accept a motion to accept the dash two and dash three amendments.
Okay. May I make those together, Madam Chair? Do I need to do it separately?
Separately.
Okay. I don't know. Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
We need to.
Could we hold up just for a moment? I can't really hear what's going on.
Okay.
Ask for a little.
Mm-hmm. What? We don't have all the paperwork.
All right, I'll have the gamble and tell them all to be quiet.
I just want them to
figure out who all these constituents
are. Where are you going? Oh. I'm like, you get to leave in the middle of the committee.
Hey, we can continue. Representative Smith Warner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I move to adopt the dash two amendment to House Bill 2478.
Vice Chair Smith Warner has moved to adopt the dash two amendments, House Bill 2478. Is there any discussion?
I need to take a moment to look at those, if I might.
We'll be adopting the dash twos and the dash threes. And can you describe what each of those
do? Madam Chair, members of the committee, the dash two amendment, I would point out that the biggest difference in the dash two from the dash one that we previously heard is it does not have section seven anymore. And that's the only substantive difference, as I know that was a point raised during previous discussion on the amendment. And the dash three amendment will restore language. It restores reference to a man and a woman and a husband and a wife in reference to legal contract of marriage, and restores husband and wife in reference to meaning of marriage recognized under the law.
Thank you.
Okay, and so is there any other discussion?
On the dash twos.
On the dash twos.
Right, no.
Okay, and with that, is there any objection to the dash twos? No. Seeing none, dash two amendments are adopted. Representative Smith Warner.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the dash three amendment to House Bill 2478, please.
Representative Smith Warner has moved to adopt the dash three amendments on House Bill 2478. Is there any discussion? Representative Wilson.
Madam Chair, thank you. I understand that Speaker Kotek and yourself have worked with Representative McLean to remove all references to the definition of marriage here, and Representative McLean wants to convey his thanks. The dash threes are acceptable to him, and I understand the dash threes are only a cleanup as to gender references by simply stating spouse rather than husband and wife.
Okay. Thank you. With that, any other discussion? Zoe, will you call the roll?
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
Representative Kenworth.
Excused.
Representative McLean.
This is on the amendment. He's excused.
Representative Nose.
Aye.
Representative Rayfield.
Yes.
Representative Wilson.
Aye.
Vice
Chair Dillon.
Aye.
Vice Chair Smith Warner.
Aye.
Chair Hoyle.
Aye. With that, I'd accept another motion. Sorry. Yeah. Dash three amendments have been adopted. Now I would accept a motion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2478 to the floor with a do pass as amended recommendation.
Representative Smith Warner, Vice Chair Smith Warner, has moved that House Bill 2478 be moved with a do pass as amended recommendation. Is there discussion?
Madam Chair, only to telegraph my move, I will be a no vote.
Okay. With that, Zoe, will you call the roll?
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
Representative
Kenmer. Excused.
Representative McLean.
Excused.
Representative
Nose. Aye.
Representative Rayfield.
Yes.
Representative Wilson.
No.
Vice Chair Dillon.
No.
Vice Chair Smith Warner.
Aye.
Chair Hoyle.
Aye. With that, the motion passes. Representative Nose, would you like to carry the bill?
I would absolutely like to carry the bill.
Great. Close the work session on House Bill 2478. Open a work session on House Bill 3500. Erin, will you review the measure?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 3500, we originally heard on April 8th. The underlying measure provides primary ballot of all major parties to non-affiliated voters. You have a dash 15 amendment. The dash 15 amendment replaces the original measure. It creates a 17-member task force on expanding access to more voters in the primary to conduct analysis and determine the best method or methods to expand access to more electors in a primary election in Oregon. The task force specifies membership to be appointed by Speaker of the House, Senate President, House Minority, and Senate Minority Leaders. Task force is to report to interim committees of legislature related to rules by December 31st, 2015. The task force is to be staffed by legislative administration, and the task force sunsets December 31st, 2016. You have a no revenue impact. A fiscal statement was issued on the measure. The fiscal impact statement does need and indicate that this measure will have to go to Ways and Means. So if you adopt the Dash 15 amendment, the motion would be to request a referral to Ways and Means.
Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'll make the motion. I move to adopt the Dash 15 amendment to House Bill 3500.
Vice Chair Gilliam has moved to adopt the Dash 15 amendment to House Bill 3500. Is there discussion? Yes, Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was going to comment on the other bill, and part of that comment relates to my comment to this one. And it has to do with, once again, my appreciation for your ability to work with both sides of the aisle. This is a complicated measure, and it requires, I think, more work and folks coming to the table. And I not only appreciate it, I support the idea of the amendment and who will be at the table, and I will be an aye.
Thank you. Any other discussion on the amendment? Is there objection? Seeing none, the motion passes. Vice Chair Gilliam?
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3500 with the due pass as amended recommendation and that the measure be referred to Ways and Means.
Vice Chair Gilliam has moved House Bill 3500 with the due pass as amended recommendation and the measure be referred to Ways and Means. Is there discussion? Is there objection?
Yes, I will be a no vote.
Okay, Zoe, you want to call the roll?
Representative Barnheim.
Aye.
Representative Tenemer.
Is excused.
Representative McLean.
Is excused.
Representative Nose.
Aye.
Representative Rayfield.
Yes.
Representative Wilson.
No.
Vice Chair Gilliam.
Aye.
Vice Chair Smith Warner.
Aye.
Chair Hoyle.
Aye. Motion passes. Close the work session on House Bill 3500. Not yet.
Madam, an inquiry. Do you plan to work 3470?
No, I was just going to say we'll be carrying over House Bills 3470, House Bill 2936, and House Bill 2879. And with.
Until
Wednesday?
The
27th.
We'll be meeting on Monday.
Because we're not meeting on Monday, and I hope everybody.
That.
And Madam Chair, we already carried over 3549, correct?
Yeah.
Which would also be on the docket.
Right, that's right. And we are carrying over 3549 when we will move that bill. So with that, the House Rules Committee is adjourned, and I want to thank everybody for being here and look forward to seeing you next week. I hope you enjoy your here and look forward to seeing you next week. I hope you enjoy.